rather stay with the Word of God. Okay, well, let's do. Here's what he says in chapter 5, verse 1. For we know that if the tent that is our earthly home, that's our body, is destroyed, we have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. And when you read that, you get the sense that there's something about to happen. Paul goes on to say, for in this tent, this body, we groan, longing to put on our heavenly dwelling, if indeed by putting it on we may not be found naked. For while we are still in this tent, we groan, being burdened. Not that we should be unclothed, but that we would be further clothed, so that what is mortal may be swallowed up by life. He who has prepared us for this very thing is God, who has given us the Spirit as a guarantee. There you have it. This old house. Paul is talking about the body, and he says, we are groaning. We're in agony. We hurt. Well, we do, don't we? We're just all over the place. Paul writes that he had rather be with the Lord. But if he's not with the Lord, he's going to be here in this tent. And I think it's interesting that as I was reading this in a different version, Paul is saying we're going to strike this tent. Now, I don't know if you know what that means. There's a difference here. When Paul said we are going to depart, we'll read that here in a minute. But it's kind of like you're moving a tent from one place to another. It's used of Abraham when Abraham wandered. He was looking for a house with foundations. Well, the tent was a something special. You lived in it, but then when it came time to go, you packed up the tent and you walked on. You left where you were. You had to move from one place to the other. And Paul uses that illusion. He uses that picture by saying, death is not an end, but a new beginning. When we were the Boy Scouts, we had a 3-day camp out, but we didn't set our camp and stay for 3 days in one spot. We would arrive at our destination, we'd put up our little pup tents, throw out our bedding, as it were, and then we'd go out and build a fire pit, and get us a latrine out yonder, and we'd sit down and cook, and oh, we had great stuff to eat. We had dirt-crusted marshmallows. We had bug-infested rice and stuff in a foil pack. You'd be amazed how ants can get into your backpack. But boy, we would do it. If we'd do that one day, and then on the next morning after we'd had breakfast, we had to take everything down. We had to go fill in the latrine. We had to make sure the fire was out and cold. You never left a hot fire. And then we'd pick up the tent, we'd move to another spot, and we'd set it up and start the whole process. That's what Paul's going to talk about here. I think that's what the song that Stuart sang is about that. This old house is getting feeble. This old house is getting worn. But Paul starts out on a positive note. Look at the first three words of verse 1. For we know. And that is no, not maybe. I am confident in what I'm saying. I'm confident to know that if the tent that is our eternal earthly home is destroyed, we have a building from God. I know that. There's no doubt in my mind that when I die, I'm not snuffed out like a candle in the wind. I don't go to a nether world where there's nothing and I'm just dissipated. One of the great and horrible theories going around today in theological circles is the theory of annihilation. And it's all because a lot of people cannot handle the concept of hell. So they eliminate it altogether and say that when we die, we are simply annihilated. There's no reincarnation like the Hindus believe. There's no future dwelling like some of the Buddhists believe. You get to go to the big temple with big Buddha sitting there just doing what he does. It's not like that. The Bible is very clear. Paul said we know that if our tent, that's our earthly, is destroyed, or if it's removed, or if it's transported, we have a home in heaven. And it's not a home that we built. It's a home that God has prepared. I like verse 5 very much. He who has prepared us for this very thing is God, who has given us the Spirit as a guarantee. Here's what Paul's trying to get across. This old house is getting weary. My shingles are falling off. My hair's falling out. We can find this same concept in a different place. I don't know if you want to turn to it, but if you want to go to Ecclesiastes for just a minute, we're going to find an amplification of this, and I think you can find Ecclesiastes. I'm not going to try to spell it, but it's in the Old Testament, and it's, well, goodness, I can't even find it myself now. Victor up here to pick this out for me. Huh? Yeah, it's after Proverbs. Thank you. We go to Psalms, and then we go to Proverbs, and then we go to Ecclesiastes. Thank you. You know, that's what God gave wives for. To keep you on the straight and narrow. I'm going to find it. I promise you, I will. I haven't practiced with this Bible very much because this is not the size that I'd use for sword drill. But in Ecclesiastes chapter 12, I want you to listen to what the writer says. Beginning in verse 3, he says, "In the day when the keepers of the house tremble, and the strong men are bent, and the grinders cease because they are few, and those who look through the windows are dimmed, and the doors on the street are shut, when the sound of the grinding is low, and one rises up at the sound of a bird, and all the daughters of song are brought low. They are afraid also of what is high, and terrors are in the way. The almond tree blossoms, the grasshopper drags itself along, and desire fails, because man is going to his eternal home, and the mourners go about the street." Now, the writer is talking about himself. He said, vanity of vanities, all is vanity, there's nothing new under the sun. And then at the end of the chapter, he starts talking about all of this stuff. In verse 3, the keepers of the house will tremble. That's a picture of the hands. Now, before you think I'm just being fanciful in my thought, I'm taking this from notes that I took before 1990 when I was listening to Chuck Swindoll go through Ecclesiastes. So this is Chuck Swindoll's interpretation. So if you don't like the way I read it, go talk to him. He just lost his sister not long ago, and so they're in grieving a little bit. "But the keepers of the house are your hands. You use them to protect yourself. And there's a time when they're going to get palsied, and they're going to get weak, and they're going to hurt. And if arthritis hasn't already hit you, it will." All right? I see Carol shaking her head. Amen. Don't hold your hand up. It might ache. But that's the keepers. The hands, they fail. And then he said, "The strong men shall bow themselves." He's talking about your knees. Look, I would bow and kneel in are so sore. We walked the hard halls of that hospital all day long. And at the end of the day, it's like I've refereed a football game. I used to come home and ice my knees down and then just ache. But the knees, the strong men shall bow themselves. You know, I remember running upstairs, and then I used to walk upstairs. Now I hunt for an elevator. If they don't have one, I'll go to another building. You just don't want to go because you can't move anymore. And he says the grinders will cease. What are the grinders? Well, your teeth. Yeah. I wear a night guard so I don't grind my teeth all the time. They're getting old. They run out. I remember dating a girl up in Arkansas once. She'd be a lot prettier if she'd pulled that last tooth, but it didn't matter. We absolutely lose our grinders. Some of us can take them out and put them over on the desk there, on the bathroom table. It said, you look out the windows. The windows are darkened. That's your eyes. See, I used to never wear glasses. Then I went to glasses, and then I had to go to bifocals. Now I've got trifocals, and I don't know that they have four focals, but whatever it is, our eyes are getting weaker. We get cataracts. We can't see. Somebody said, well, I only use glasses when I want to read anything. So the doors will be shut in the street. What is that? I can't hear anymore. My hearing has become selective. You either shout or you don't. That's the selection. I can't hear. And with this cotton-picking mask on now, it's hard to hear people in the hospital. They're laying there and they're hurting and they're wanting to pray. And well, for what would you like me to pray? Okay, we'll do it. Lord, and they think I've gone charismatic. But your hearing goes away. Verse 4, again, it says, he shall rise up at the voice of the bird. What's he talking about? He's talking about getting up early. I used to stay up late, and I'd sleep till 10. I'd get up and have a little quick breakfast and take a nap till 11:30. That was just a good day. That's how you would do it back, but not anymore. Now you get up with a rooster. We're old enough to stay in bed. We're not hurting anymore, but we stay up, and we'll go get a cup of coffee and read the morning paper. I remember one of the Big Bang series episodes with Bob Newhart, and one of the guys went and knocked on his door, and he opened the door, and it was like 7 o'clock, and I believe it was Sheldon. He said, did I bother you? And he said, no, I have to get up in another 2 hours and wander the house for 35 minutes. I just do that. Then he says, they're afraid of that which is high in verse 5. The only reason older folks find places that are high so they can jump off. They're ready to go. But you're afraid. You're nervous. You're not steady on your feet. And he talks about the almond tree in verse 5. That's the white hair on the head, if there is any left. And then he says, man goeth to his long home. Why would God allow that? I had a thought the other day, you know, it'd be nice if there was a legitimate way to depart this earth. But there's not. You see, life is given to God. We have to constantly reiterate that to mother-in-law. She is so ready to die. She's so ready to go. But we just have to keep loving her. And you know what? That's God's way of teaching us patience and love and tenderness. In my office, oh, it's been a week or two now, and I heard singing. Julie was singing. and she was singing to her mother. What a fellowship, what a joy divine, leaning on the everlasting arms. Then she'd sing, "When We All Get to Heaven," and Gene would join in. It's amazing how music that she grew up singing is still some of the parts of her memory that still works. Well, Paul says, "I'm going to go to heaven." Verse 6. "So we are always of good courage. We know that while we are at home in the body," this tent, "we are away from the Lord." Now, clearly he wasn't trying to say that God does not indwell his children. He's talking about the body here. Because we know that once we give our hearts to Jesus Christ, once we're saved, the Lord is indwelt within us by the Holy Spirit. He never leaves us. He'll never leave us. But Paul is not talking about that now. He's talking about the body. And he says, "In the body we are away from the Lord, for we walk by faith and not by sight." And he says, yes, we're of good courage. I'm not afraid of death. I'm not afraid of what's coming. I used to be invited to speak at youth banquets, youth rallies. And I had a little trick. I was pretty smart in a lot of stuff. And I would say, "I will answer any question you have." Well, we'd get the typical stuff. Why is the sky blue? You know, that kind of thing. Why do we drive on a parkway and park on a driveway? Well, those are questions that can't be answered. But then they'd eventually come around to the real question, what is heaven like? And I would dig a little deeper because I knew that they were not wondering about streets of gold, gates of pearl. They were wondering, will I get to heaven? Can you tell me how to get there? So Paul comes and says, "I want to tell you, if I am not in the body, I'm going to be with the Lord. And that's my preference, to be with the Lord." I've got to learn not to lead music and preach on the same day. I've got to learn that. He said the same thing in Philippians. He said, "For me to live is Christ, but to die is gain." And he meant very clearly that in this body, not come to the point of death, I know that I'm going to go to be with the Lord. There's no doubt. I don't fear it. My body is like that old house, and it's okay to move out of this old house. It's okay to do that. He said, we are always confident. We are always of good courage. We know that while we are at home in the body, we're away from the Lord. And by the time he finishes, in verse 8, he says, yes, we are of good courage. Very positive. Very positive. And we would rather be away from the body. That would be my choice. And to be at home with the Lord, that's what I would prefer. But while I'm here, I'm going to sing his song. I'm going to follow his command. I sit in the hospital, present tense, with a lot of people who are dying. We have some people that are in the COVID unit. There's a big red sign on their door: "Don't come in here unless you're fully equipped and fully clothed." sometimes they're not on a ventilator. They can talk, but they know they're going to die. I was up in a room this week, and there was a young lady there. She was 86. She was a believer, and she was about to die. She did, about 2 hours after I left the room. But she was not intubated. She was able to talk a little bit. She was on what we call comfort measures, which means we were not going to let her hurt. We were not going to let her suffer, but she was going to have the full confidence of her mind. And when I walked in, she saw something on my face. I just didn't want to be in there, but I had to be because she had requested a visit, and that's something that we did. And when I got in there, all of a sudden my attitude changed. I did want to be there. She reached out and took my hand in both of hers, and she said, "I'm sure you see a lot of people in this hospital who die without the Lord. I want you to know that I'm anxious to see Lord Jesus. I'm sorry my family is not here. I wish they would come, but they're not here. But Chaplain, I want to tell you, I'm not alone. I've never felt alone because I believe God is with me. I'm confident. I promise you, Chaplain, I'm confident that when I quit breathing, I'm going to wake up in heaven." Now, people, there's a lot of folks that won't even talk about death until 30 or 40 minutes after it's over. Families don't want to think about it. Families reject me even mentioning a funeral home to them. They just don't want to talk about that. Paul was not like that. This lady who held my hand was not like that. Now, say what you will, the Spirit of God gives us, all of our chaplains, an inner peace. He does. He gives us something in here that we cannot drink, we cannot eat, we cannot smell or taste, but we can feel. We know that the Spirit of God is strengthening our inner man. And when this old body is gone, look, if I fall down here dead and Ron comes up here and feels my pulse and, nope, he's dead, well, that's not true. The body is quit. I'm not dead. Like that old poem, "Underneath this stand of trees, there lies a man whose name was Pease. But Pease ain't here, just the pod. Pease shelled out and went to God." And that's what'll happen. We'll go be with him. I've had some great experiences up there. I read years ago about a story of Cyrus the Great in Persia. There was a young man who kept raiding the outlying villages of Cyrus's kingdom. And he'd go in, he wouldn't kill anybody, but he'd raid them and take their stuff. I immediately thought about Hagar the Horrible in the cartoon, in the comic papers. But Cyrus didn't like it, so he sent his whole army out to bring this guy in. The guy's name was Cagular. Cagular. And he had the army capture him and bring him, his wife, and his kids all to Persia, into the capital city, and he was going to make a spectacle of this robber and kill him. But Cyrus looked at him and saw he was relatively tall for the day. He was well complected. He looked wonderful. He had kind of a blue eye, according to the story. and his wife was gorgeous. His children were fantastic, kind of like me and my family, only I'm a little too short. But Cyrus looked at him and he thought to himself, you know, it's a shame to have to kill this family. So he called the man up to him with all the people around. They knew that they were going to see a beheading or something. And he said, I want to ask you, sir, if I spare your life, what will you do? And he said, I would be your servant and live the rest of my life for you. And he said, well, sir, what if I spared the life of your children? What would you do? He said, I would go back home and gather my men and put your banner and your flag over our group, and we'd fight battles and win victories for you. Cyrus looked at his wife and said, tell me, sir, if I spare your wife's life, what would you do? He said, I would instantly die at your command. Cyrus said, I can't kill this family. So he dismissed them. They went home and they were sitting by the fire that night, and the guy said to his wife, when you walked in, did you notice the beautiful marble in that palace? She said, no. Well, did you notice the tapestries, how glorious they looked? She said, no. What about that golden throne that he sat on? Didn't that impress you? She said, no. And he said, why? Did you not notice that stuff? And in the story, she said, I had only eyes for the man who said he would die. Folks, this old house is getting feeble. This old house is getting worn. And one day we are going to transfer. We are going to depart. We're going to transition from here to there. And when we do, it'll be a joyous moment. We don't need to fear it. If you've given your heart to Jesus Christ, and you recognize His death at the cross for your death, His burial as yours, His resurrection as a promise of what He's given you, and you understand that if you'll simply confess Jesus Christ as Lord, you'll be saved. You remember that. And if you do that, you have no fear. No fear. Somebody said, well, I don't fear dying. I just feel the fear of the process. Well, I don't even fear the process. I stood in one of our ICU rooms in July. That room was full. There was a man on the bed who was about to die, Grandpa. His wife was there. He had two sons over here. He had a daughter there. And as I was sitting there, I felt like I was an interloper. I stood back and just watched. They were all believers, and the man died. And I still have it in my book, what I wrote down. It's what I wrote. Muffled quietness filled the room where Grandpa was about to die. For 53 years, he kept the pledge. His wife stood by his side. Sons, daughters, in-laws all took turns to say goodbye. And as the vent was removed and comfort began, tears filled our eyes. We could almost hear angel wings lovingly standing by, ready to escort a man of God to his eternal home on high. Truly, a believer has a legacy to share, regardless of years on earth. For one who was known by the Father above from long before his birth. All the children are saved, and the grandkids as well, said the wife in a teary, victorious tone. then the moment came. The last breath was breathed, and the believer was ushered home. I think I changed about 6 words from the time I wrote that in that room, scribbled it in my little book, until I got to the computer over at the desk and typed it out and printed it out, and I gave a copy to the wife. They had a cremation ceremony 3 weeks ago. They felt like they were safe enough together, and they read this poem at his funeral. There was a lady there who was attending, and she said, "I knew a preacher in McKinney whose name was Ricky. I wonder if it's the same guy." So she called, and it was the same guy. She lived in Princeton, had come over 2 or 3 times and attended, but never did join. But she had then moved to Trenton, and up in Trenton, she heard this little poem, called me, and said how much it moved the family. And I said, "Hey, I just put down on paper what Paul had already said. We are confident, confident of this, that if we are absent from the body, that our preference is to be present with the Lord." And I'm here to tell you, brethren, God is not afraid of our tears. He's not afraid of our doubt. He is not afraid to be able to confidently tell you, whether you're watching, whether you're sitting, whether you're listening later on, if you give your heart to Jesus Christ, if you give your life to Him, He will save you. All you have to do, come. Come just as you are. Hear the Spirit call. This invitation is for you. If you feel like you need to know Christ, you can do it today. You can give your heart to Him. Would you stand with me? Lord in heaven, touch lives, touch hearts today. As we sing, an invitation is for anyone who would hear, anyone who would come. Come just as you are. Tremendous week. And when you come back, I'll have the heat on for you.